Sports Pro Basketball Talk podcast. Brett Polakoff here with Kurt Helam. What is going on, Kurt?
How's it going, Brett? It's good here, and it's warm finally where you are, so all's good, man.
Yeah, it might be officially spring. The turkeys that live on my property actually were out last night looking for food, so that's a good thing. All right, well, let's get into some NBA action here. So we had a little bit of news yesterday. The NBA put out a release that the Players Association, the union for the players, went ahead and notified the league that it would not go for Adam Silver's salary cap smoothing proposal. With the new television broadcast rights deal, the salary cap is directly tied to that income. And so Adam Silver had proposed a plan to basically, slowly, gradually increase the salary cap over time instead of having, somewhere in the neighborhood of a $30 million spike from one season to the next. It would happen in advance of the 2016-17 season. Players Union wasn't going for it. You know, from the league standpoint, Adam Silver said, look, we're going to pay you all the money that you would have been due anyway. We would just give it to you in a lump sum and you could divide it up among the players at the end of the season. Players Union said no. I'm not sure that's great for the bulk of the players in the NBA. What's your take on the union's decision there?
Yeah, I'm not sure that it is either. I think that the league's point, even though clearly this is what the owners wanted for financial reasons, and I think just to have some control over this, because this makes the summer of 2016 essentially just chaos theory. It is going to be nuts because the salary cap is going to jump. Teams are estimated, and I talked to Larry Kuhn and a couple guys with the teams about this. They're expecting somewhere between 66 and 67 million next year for the salary cap at 63 this year. It's going to jump to 90-ish, 88 to 92, somewhere in that range. I mean, you're talking about a $23 to $25 million jump in the salary cap, and you've got to spend 90% of that to hit the floor. A bunch of guys are going to, I think both this summer and then especially next summer, are going to get wildly overpaid because teams have the cash to burn. But it doesn't spread it out among everybody. It's basically if you're a free agent in 2016, you're going to get that cash. And I think to me, this really comes back to you look at who's the head of the union now. It's Chris Paul, who's not a free agent in that window, but is a max level player guy. And the VP is LeBron James, who just happens to be a free agent in 2016.
Right.
So, I mean, you're talking in LeBron's case, multiple millions of dollars more per year he will get this way. And I'm not saying that that's the only motivation. Their official statement, that we kind of got leaked. I would say official statement. Their official leak type of thing was basically, hey, you're suppressing the salaries. You're suppressing what the max salary would be. We're not okay with that. It's got to be, you can't suppress the max salaries like that. And that's their logic. I kind of get that. But again, how many max guys are there in the league? I mean, not even in the should there be max guys. I mean, actual, like, they get paid, DeAndre Jordan, I don't know if I call him a max guy. He's going to get max or near max money this summer. How many guys like there are that in the league? 20? 25? And after that, maybe 30? After that, you're right. I mean, spreading this out would have helped the guys who are free agents in 2017, 2018, 2019 that aren't now.
Well, that's my point here is that it's less than 10% of the league is going to be max players. If you look at, 15 players on a roster, 30 teams, that's 450 guys, and we're talking 30, 35 guys that might be max level players. And I think you hit it on the head. You look at who's running the players union now. You look at Chris Paul. You look at LeBron James. Those guys are max players. They're looking out for the elite and the superstars of the league. You know, it's interesting when you start to look into the collective bargaining agreement. Max salaries, max contracts are the only ones tied directly to the salary cap. Like right now, if you look up what a rookie scale contract is, we know what that is through the life of the collective bargaining agreement. It's a fixed dollar amount. Same with mid-level exception, room exception. All that stuff is a set fixed dollar amount. The only thing that isn't is max contracts, which are related to the salary cap. So, we had a post up a while ago, I think you did it actually, where speculating that Kevin Durant might get a $200 million contract, if he stays in Oklahoma City. That's what we're talking about by them, throwing this smoothing idea out the window. You're talking about, 90% of the league isn't going to be affected by it. I'm not sure this is in the best interest of the bulk of the players. But, the other thing that we're kind of seeing here with the new executive director of the Players Association, Michelle Roberts, it kind of seems like anything that the NBA wants or that ownership wants in terms of collective bargaining, she's like, no, smack down, immediately no. Maybe we'll talk about it at the bargaining table, but she just goes in the complete opposite direction. Now, it's probably to set up the union from you know, a strong standpoint when negotiating begins. But, you know, again, it may be doing more harm than good overall, I think.
You know, I think you hit to my other point on this entire conversation, which is this is all about positioning themselves for 2017. It's really pretty simple. They and you know this, most of the listeners here know this. The union feels it got slammed because, you know what? It did get slammed in the last collective bargaining.
Yeah, absolutely.
They got worked, and even people with teams will tell you, you know, hey, we won that pretty big. They know what they've got. So now they want some of that back. Like they're seeing the franchise values through the roof. They're seeing the new TV deal, and they want concessions. Even Adam Silver kind of hinted that the owners may not wipe up at the next collective bargaining agreement like some of the hardcore guys might want, because there's so much money on the table. It's much harder for the owners to walk away. That said, I mean, everything she's doing right now, everything she is doing is about getting her ducks in a row. I'll use an easy example. That whole like thing where she said, I can't believe reporters are standing around in the locker room not asking questions.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
Okay, you and I know why that occurs. And for people who don't listen, look, or aren't there, the reason is, A, occasionally somebody speaks, and I've had this happen, Brett's had this happen, where unexpectedly a guy who didn't speak at shoot around and just decides to open up. LeBron's done it, KD's done it, all these countless guys, big and small, have done it and provided really interesting stuff. So you're hanging around hoping for that good content that comes once every, 10 games,
yeah.
12 games? I mean, it doesn't happen very often, but enough that, you know, look, you've got to wait for it, because if you're not there, I have left the Laker locker room, gone back to just type up the stuff I had from the coaches and do some work and all of a sudden see tweets start flying across from somebody talking in the locker room because I walked out. You walk out at your own risk. So it's a system set up for this. What she's saying, though, resonates with the players. And that's what this is really about. I think a lot of what she's doing is about resonating with the players, because she wants a much more unified force come 2017. Look, my guess, she's a litigator at heart. She would like to decertify, which Billy Hunter wasn't willing to do. Decertify and go to court and get in a courtroom where she's strong instantly. And like, let's make this thing, let's not mess around. Let's make this thing nasty. And I think that's to do that, you've really got to have the players behind you. She doesn't come from the player background, so she is doing everything she can to make sure those ducks are in a row. And frankly, that's the smart play if you're her.
Yeah, that's definitely a good point. You know, just quickly on the locker room thing, you know, there's a window of media availability, and especially if you're like a beat guy covering the team, you just need to hang out in there just to see if anything happens. You know, just to, you might overhear a conversation. You're not eavesdropping. Most of the time, there's nobody even in the locker room. Guys are in the training room. They're on the practice court at some arenas. They're out on the main floor shooting. The locker room during that media availability is largely empty, but sometimes guys are in there, and sometimes you oversee. You can see how relationships are between one player and the next. Sometimes you catch a funny side of a player. Just, it's your job, man. Your job is to cover the team. You need to be in there, not necessarily always interviewing players.
I will tell you, some of the best stuff I've gotten in terms of building relationships and just off the record are casual conversations, no microphones, and funny stuff. Like, to be honest with you, before he got injured and stuff, even Kobe Bryant did it a couple times this year where he'd come in to put on his shoes and get dressed to go out and you know, go warm up or whatever. Kobe, I think, honestly, honestly at this point it is at his age, relates more because he's closer in age to the media guys.
Yeah.
Most of the guys on his team. And I've been in there when we've had conversations about kids. Like, I have three daughters. He has two daughters. Eric Pincus from the LA Times has three daughters. Like, there's all these people with the Kamenitskis. There's all these people with daughters around the Lakers. And so there's this conversation about raising daughters as men that, look, never make. Look, not a word of it's, you know, this is probably the most anybody's talked about it. Nobody discusses it. It's not something that really comes up. But it exists out there. And it's this kind of relationship building thing. So when you're asking questions later, you don't get, you know, the Popovich stare when you ask something.
Yeah, the relationship building is key. And any beat reporter, especially the guys that travel with the team, will tell you that time is just invaluable, you know, to sort of build that trust and sort of let them see that you're actually a normal person. You're not there just to sort of screw them over with some misplaced quote.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think that it takes time to build those kind of relationships with teams. And so, yeah. And frankly, I found it harder. I think it's in some ways, that's why the beat guys are in there. I found it harder as a quote unquote national type reporter who's covering yeah. every team. I spend, you know, I talk about the Laker locker room or the Clipper locker room because I'm in LA, but I probably spend as much time in the visitor locker room at Staples as I do there because well, the Clippers are pretty interesting. Generally, whoever the Lakers are playing is more interesting than the Lakers right now.
Well, this season for sure. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, okay. So getting back to this collective bargaining stuff real quick. So, you know, once again, we talked about how Michelle Roberts right now is just positioning herself, you know, anything the league wants, you know, she's taking the immediate opposite stance. What's your take on the age limit thing? Like, I'm somebody that doesn't care one iota about the age limit. I don't care if it's 25 and I don't care if it's 16. I just don't. I would like it to be older because I like NBA basketball to be not about developing players. The younger the guys that you allow into the league, you have to give them playing time when they're not ready. So it's going to make the overall product on the floor worse, you know, for the general fan. So for that reason, I'd like it older. But I don't see necessarily the union's angle on wanting to dial that back and get the age limit to be even lower. Well, so what's kind of your overall take on the age limit thing?
Well, two things I think are going on here. First, again, this goes back to her trying to get all the players on her side for 2017, because look, every player in the NBA thinks that they were ready to play in the NBA in 16. Like the right. egos are big. They were told they were stars. So there's that part of it still. But you know, if you let me do what I wanted, it'd be a very baseball style system. And you wrote about the Arne Tellem suggestion. I don't hate that. I know it's very agent based and it's very unlikely to ever get approved, but I don't hate his basic concept, which is, you can be drafted out of high school. If you're not drafted, you don't lose your eligibility. Like if you declare for the draft or you're just out there, and then if you have to go to college, if you're not drafted or you choose to go to college, you've got to be there at least two, probably, frankly, I'd say 3 years before you come out. So that the only guys you're developing, and this it does create a problem because guys will have to get drafted on potential, and this is why it'll never pass because the NBA teams don't want to have to rate these guys. But to me, if you're Anthony Davis or this year Emeka Okafor, Towns or something, develop in the D League, develop in the pros, develop, you know, it's time for you to make that step. Everybody else, go to college and spend 3 years and we'll see how you come out. That, in my world, is kind of the ideal situation.
Yeah, I definitely don't want the younger players, you know, infiltrating the league to the point where we have to start playing, you know, 17 and 18 year olds again that aren't really ready. I do like the D League idea of turning that into like a legit developmental system. Now it can only happen if every organization has its own D League team so that they can sort of, you know, groom players and teach them to their exact specifications of their, you know, whether it's their coach or their offensive system, they can get guys in that and develop them their way. So we're going to need 30 D League teams for that to happen. Each one is going to have its own affiliation, and the salaries are going to have to come up, right? So I think Tellem said, you know, 50K is a decent starting point. I would agree with that. You know, that's definitely a livable wage for these guys in their first year or two.
And I don't think, by the way, people realize out there, if you are a D League player, you make between 25 and 36.
Yeah.
Like, you do not make a lot of money. A lot of these guys have second gigs on the side or family support or help from somebody else because it's not, especially, you know, it's not, you're not making a lot of money. You're making minimum wage type of money, frankly. I mean, and I don't know if I shouldn't say minimum wage. It's probably a little higher than that, but it's not what you'd expect for a professional basketball player.
Yeah. You're talking about guys making like in the $13 to $18 an hour range. That's not a lot of money if you're trying to be a pro basketball player, but money is really the real issue, right? If you're going to add all those D League teams and then you're going to jack up the salaries, that's a lot more payroll for the teams to sort of, you know, be responsible for. And then it comes down to, where does that money come from? Well, obviously the broadcast rights deal, there's a ton of money there. Some of that would have to be appropriated. That's a good place to start, but that's where you're going to get pushback from the owners on the true developmental system is, you know, who's going to pay for it? Where's the money coming from? And look, you know, while we saw the Clippers sell for $2 billion, and that's going to be obviously a huge point of contention when the next collective bargaining agreement talks go down, there are teams that still can show on a balance sheet that they lose money season to season, depending on the payroll, depending on attendance, depending on things like that. And as long as that happens, the owners aren't going to be willing to spring for something like, you know, a brand new developmental league. It's not going to happen.
That number, by the way, changes once the TV money rolls in. I mean, I'm using a union estimate, so it's a little fudgy, but their theory is the only team that would have lost money under the new TV deal last year was the Nets, and the Nets did it to themselves. I mean, that ridiculous payroll, that ridiculous tax, you know, they wanted to open that building, and Prokhorov said spend, and Billy King spent. And I don't even, as much as I'm not a Billy King fan, I don't even blame him for this. Like, he got an order from ownership to come up with enough money, or enough wins, I should say. Don't worry about the money. Come up with enough wins to open this building. I do love the building. We've now been there for All-Star. I got to hang out in there. It's a fantastic building. It's a really great building. But they spent to open that thing. And I think it all comes back to that. I think once the TV money is coming in, I don't think any owner is going to be losing money.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting. All right, well, let's shift, talk some actual basketball here. I want to get into this MVP race, because I don't think we've seen a race this solid, this strong in many, many years. You're talking about, it's legitimately a five-guy race. Chris Paul should be in there as that sixth guy. He's just not going to be because there's too many guys. But you got Stephen Curry, the best player on the, you know, arguably the best team in the Golden State Warriors. He's been the most fun player to watch all season. There's no question about that. His highlights are video game-esque. They're ridiculous. Not just shooting, but passing, too. I mean, the guy's been insane. You got James Harden, who's carried the Rockets with Dwight Howard out, who's actually trying on the defensive end of the floor this season. He's already one of the elite offensive players, but he's now playing a little bit of defense, and Houston would be completely lost without him. You got LeBron James surging, like we expected. You got Anthony Davis, who's putting up, you know, insane, historically great numbers on a team that's may or may not make the playoffs. And then you got Russell Westbrook, who's doing the same thing in Oklahoma City. What do you think about the MVP race? Who do you got right now?
All right, let me start here. Anthony Davis isn't going to win this thing.
Right.
Because he does not – look, you and I know this, and I think a lot of listeners know this. It's going to come down to narrative. It's not just numbers. You have you almost need a story to tell. And Davis doesn't have that yet. They're not good enough. If you're picking the guy who has played the best this NBA season, you are picking Davis. I mean, look, 24.5 points, a little over 10 boards, almost 3 blocks per game. Plus, I think this is my favorite stat. I was looking at the defensive numbers the other day. Whoever Anthony Davis is guarding, whoever he's within 5 feet of when they shoot, they're shooting under 40%. He is absolutely destroying guys defensively. He owns both ends of the floor. It's kind of ridiculous. So he's going to end up – if he doesn't end up fourth or fifth, voters are doing it wrong. If you made me pick right now, I'd still go with Steph Curry. It's not just the best player on the best team. He's certainly putting up numbers. But to me, it's a combination of putting up numbers, your team succeeding, but you've also got to be crucial to that team. Well, I looked it up the other day. Steph Curry, when he steps off the floor, they're a little over 17 points worse per 100 possessions than what he's on. It's ridiculous. He's the guy. I mean, he is so key to what they do. And so I'd probably go Curry 1, Westbrook 2, Harden 3. I'd go Davis 4, LeBron 5 personally. And you're right, Chris Paul gets overlooked again.
Yeah, and that just goes to show, you know, I don't have anything against, you know, any of those arguments for the players, but my list would be completely different. I would have Harden number 1 right now because I just think he's basically unstoppable offensively with the way he gets to the free throw line. And you look at Dwight Howard being out, he's carried those guys. So I would have Harden 1. I'd have Curry 2 because, again, best player on the best team. And then after that, you know, take your pick, man. I mean, LeBron has been ridiculous. Anthony Davis, for all the reasons you mentioned. I'd probably have to go LeBron because Cleveland's going to finish maybe as high as second place in the East.
No, they're going to finish. a second. Have you watched Toronto?
Yeah, Toronto's been a disaster, man, and same with Washington. But, you know, you're talking about Oklahoma City and New Orleans for very good reasons. There's been injury issues. There's been whatever. But one of those teams probably isn't making the playoffs unless Dallas just continues, you know, to have a brutal slide. So you don't give MVP to a guy on a non-playoff team. It just doesn't happen. You know, I wrote at the beginning of the season that Anthony Davis wasn't going to win MVP because you look back the last 15 years, the award goes to one of the best players on one of the top two or three teams. That's just what it is.
Yeah. Well, I agree that's probably why Davis doesn't win, and it's probably why Curry does win it.
Yeah.
Look, if Curry does win, that's fine. Like, and Harden as well. If Curry, Harden, or Westbrook won, I couldn't feel like I could argue that as like, oh, that's a terrible decision. No, it's any one of those guys. Westbrook has been on a Jordan-esque run of late, which is why Chris Paul's performance against him on Wednesday night, where he really held him, like defensively held him, beat him offensively, and was just brilliant, was a reminder that why Chris Paul is the point god, why he is the best point guard in the NBA right now. To me, though, it's just hard to go against Curry in the sense of his meaning to the team. And like you said, let's be honest, there's a little bit of LeBron fatigue here for voters.
For sure. Absolutely.
Because if you ask me who's the best player on the planet, it's LeBron. Like, if your vote is who is the best player in the world, it is LeBron James. He is going to get passed by Anthony Davis in the next 3 to 5 years to me. But right now, still LeBron. Better at impacts the game at both ends, can do so much. But I'll probably go with Curry because I think he's helped lift this team with how he's developed his game. I mean, you remember talking about him during the draft. We're like, he could be the next Ray Allen because of his shooting skills and how he can come off screens and works off the ball. He didn't have these handles. He certainly didn't. His defense wasn't good until the last couple of years. Like, he's really worked on the weaknesses of his game to become a complete player.
Well, and I think what gets overlooked when you talk about Curry is his passing sometimes. I mean,
yes.
His passing highlights, you know, I said this morning. You look at Curry's passing highlights, he's had a couple really, really crazy ones. He had one where he, like, faked a behind-the-back passing. I think it was against Dallas, and then whipped, like, a one-handed, like, pass along the baseline for an open three. And then he had one last night where he got double teamed. He threw a quick behind the back pass to the corner for an open three. Both of those plays, my favorite thing, this is why I say Curry's been the most fun player to watch this season. On both of those plays, right after he threw the pass, he just starts running back down the court. He knows the shot is cash. It's going in. Like, he just knows it. And that's just, I don't know, man, that type of confidence and just the level at which he's playing has been so fun to watch. You know, I can't possibly argue against Curry for MVP. I have Harden because I think he's a little bit more valuable to his team. But if either of those guys ends up with it, and I think right now, I think you're right. I think probably Steph Curry is going to be the one who ends up with it. But, you know, if Westbrook continues his tear for another 15, 20 games and drags the Thunder into the playoffs, we still don't know when Kevin Durant's coming back. They say 1 to 2 weeks. But remember, he was supposed to be back in maybe like a week, 2 weeks, you know, after this most recent procedure. So we don't know exactly when he's coming back, and we don't know what version of Kevin Durant we're going to get when he does come back. It's going to be interesting to see how those shots get divided up when that happens. But, you know, Westbrook, if he keeps it up, drags his team into the playoffs, I think he's got a shot.
You know what hurts Harden? His game isn't elegant.
It's not fun to watch, but it's been more fun this year.
You know, it's been a little more fun, and I think you're right. That what he's done in the wake of them losing Dwight Howard for this extended period has been brilliant. I think what hurts him is he's a bull in a china shop. You know, he's just charging in. He's going to draw contact. He finishes through contact as well as anyone in the league. He's great at creating creating shots. And it does pass, does do some other things, does play. His defense has gone from abysmal to decent team defense.
Serviceable. Like,
he's not great by any stretch, but plays within the team system. But his, like you say, a lot of what he does is just not pretty. Where what Steph Curry, like you're talking about Curry's passing, everything Curry does is just fun to watch. It is beautiful to watch him play the game.
Well, I will say this on Harden before we move on here, is that his style of play where he just puts his head down and barrels to the basket. And, you know, he'd oftentimes just rather get contact and rather get to the free throw line than actually score. That's not going to serve him well in the playoffs. We saw a problem with that last year in the playoffs, and we saw it in a loss to the Grizzlies recently where he just didn't get a call. He got hacked on the way to the basket. Zach Randolph, you know, killed him, raked him right across the arms. Ball comes out, no call in the closing seconds. And, you know, the Rockets were livid afterwards, but at some point the referees want to let the players decide the game, and they're going to swallow those whistles.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. I think that that hurts him. And by the way, I've gotten this question on some talk radio shows recently because I'm trying to do radio interviews. Are they better off without Dwight Howard, who's so soft? No, they are not. Statistically, I could bring up the 5.5 points they're better per game, but they need his rim protection. They need him as somebody you can't leave on offense. When Harden comes driving down the lane, the guy can't leave Howard because Howard will find space and then dunk on you, and that matters. Like, they're just better with him on the floor. If they have any playoff hopes, they have to have him.
All right, so speaking of playoffs, you know, most of the playoff teams are decided right now, right? We kind of know in each conference for the most part who's getting in, but the bottom spot in sort of the East and the West remains, you know, interesting. Now, in the East, somebody's going to make the playoffs 5 or 6 games under 500, maybe even more. You know, it's just kind of how it is. Right now, you look at the bottom of the Eastern Conference standings, you got the Pacers who've been on fire lately, and they might get Paul George back for the playoffs. Even if they don't, they might be trouble for somebody in the first round. Not trouble in terms of upsetting Atlanta or Cleveland, but definitely, you know, making it difficult, maybe taking a series to 5 or 6 games. Charlotte's been hot lately. The Celtics have been surging since they got Isaiah Thomas. He didn't play last night. They still beat the Memphis Grizzlies. Who do you like in the East to get that 8th spot? I think Indiana's kind of locked in, but you got Miami, Charlotte, and Boston, all 3 teams separated by just 1.5 games in the standings.
Yeah, first off, Indiana, I think they are in. And I think, I mean, as much as you can be in, barring another injury, but I think they're in. And I think they make life difficult for who you probably, I mean, they probably get the 7th seed. They probably make life a little bit difficult for Cleveland, who gets the 2 seed, because they defend. And you're right, they're not going to get Paul George back on the timeline that he had hoped when I spoke to him at All-Star Game. You know, we've got this stuff up at PPT. If he's not going to be back, though, he'll be back by the end of the month. He gets a few weeks under his belt. Look, he's not going to be vintage Paul George.
Right.
But suddenly you've got to guard him. Like, you can't ignore him. And, you know, C.J. Watson has had great games for them. George Hill, and I took heat for this on Twitter, but I said this before the season. Get George Hill on your fantasy team. George Hill, when he's right, when he's attacking, when he's given freedom, like he was before he was traded there. You know, he got traded there and he was like, hey, pass to David West, pass to Paul George, you're not the man anymore. When you give him freedom, he can make some plays. I think they're not going to be Cleveland, but they're going to make that a lot harder series than people realize. Just Roy Hibbert in the paint cuts off some of the things LeBron likes to do. We've seen that before. I just think that they make life difficult for the Cavs. And by the way, if you don't think Atlanta can come beat Cleveland, go watch their game from last week. Atlanta dismantled Cleveland. Absolutely took them apart defensively. Took away what LeBron wants to do, took away what Kyrie wants to do, marginalized Love, which hasn't been that hard this season. Very good game from them. And it made you think, hey, Atlanta could be in the finals. I mean, they legitimately can. I love the Eastern Conference bottom eight, though. I think that's a far more interesting race. I mean, Brooklyn's on the outside, and look at the guy. They're starting Brooke Lopez and Joe Johnson and Deron Williams and they've got all these guys who are making, you know, should be making plays for them. And they're probably on the outside looking in. I like Charlotte. Charlotte's defending again. And by the way, they get Kemba Walker back. If Kemba Walker is back, Mo Williams has been a revelation for them. If they can find a way to make that, if Steve Clifford can find a way to make that combo work, I think they get the 8th seed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with that. I think Charlotte's right there. I kind of like the way Boston's been playing, though. You know, Isaiah Thomas, I mean, they're bringing him off the bench, but he was, you know, he's scoring like 25 points a game for them. And I just, I don't know. I think Brad Stevens kind of has a little something going there, and it wouldn't surprise me if they got in. And the Nets are just a disaster. I don't know what's wrong with that team. I stopped paying attention to the Nets and the Knicks this year out here because every game I go to, they lose by 25 points, you know, and it's just not even worth it. But there's definitely something wrong with that Nets team.
I'll tell you right now, if my coach of the year ballot, which is, you know, the official ballot is three guys deep. Budenholzer one, Kidd two in Milwaukee, who's been fantastic. Brad Stevens is on that list. Brad Stevens has done a fantastic job, and he is really starting to develop something in Boston. If you're a Celtics fan, you should be optimistic about the future.
Well, you know, we pay attention to the whole league, you know, like even the bad teams, the fringe teams. So, you know, that makes sense. But Steve Kerr is going to be a close second.
That's actually a good point.
To Budenholzer. He just is. I mean, the Warriors are out of control, you know, good this season. And, you know, I think Gentry, man, Alvin Gentry on the bench with him, I think deserves a lot of that credit in Kerr's first year as a head coach. But, you know, Kerr's still running the show, calling the shots, and they've been obviously phenomenal.
Yeah, look, if first off, you're spot on. If Alvin Gentry doesn't get a head coaching job this summer, somebody's doing it wrong. He led the Clippers offense to become the best in the league, and now Golden State this season. But yeah, and you're right. Look, Kerr made this team smarter offensively, way smarter than what Mark Jackson was doing, which was ISO heavy stuff. And we've written about this at PBT a bunch of times. How you know, look, the best, my favorite example is Barnes. Harrison Barnes works better off the ball. Mark Jackson's like, hey, you're my sixth man. I'm going to throw you the ball in isolation sets, you know, make things happen. That's not what he does well. Steve Kerr comes in and goes, you know what? You work better off the ball. So why don't I put you with Curry and Thompson as a starter and let you run around off picks and make plays because everybody's got to focus on them and you're going to get the space to do the things you do. It's that kind of smart basketball that has made them make the leap.
Yeah, you know, there's no question about it. All right, so in the Western Conference, you know, looking at the bottom of the standings, Oklahoma City dropped a half game behind New Orleans last night after the loss to the Clippers. So the Pelicans are sitting in the eighth spot, but it's just a half a game. You know, who knows how that's going to play out. Dallas, you know, we thought Dallas was a lock to end up in the playoffs, and they might be. I mean, they're still 4.5 games ahead of the eighth spot right now, so they still might be, but they've gone through a pretty rough stretch. Dirk doesn't look like Dirk. Rondo hasn't been a great fit. You know, so who knows? If Dallas continues to slide and somebody like the Thunder really surges, we could see something, a little bit of a surprise there. But what do you think between the Pelicans and the Thunder?
Yeah, assuming Dallas, I just can't believe Dallas is going to keep sliding like this. Although, I mean, let's be honest, the Rondo acquisition isn't working. And he may stay, he may not stay. I don't buy the he's unhappy thing as much as is sold.
Right.
But you know where he'll go, whoever offers him the most money. But that's a whole other issue.
Yeah.
That offense hasn't clicked at all. That said, I just can't. I talked about this on a PBT Extra the other day. When you look at the schedule, not only do the Thunder have the same number of games against plus 500 teams, they've got more teams at home. They've got a couple games against sub 500 teams. I just think it's going to be hard for the Pelicans to get past them. Not impossible, especially if Durant's not back on a 1 to 2 week timeline. But I just can't see them catching the Thunder. And maybe it's just me, but I really want Thunder Warriors first round. I really want that to happen. That would be the hardest first round series in the history of the NBA. That would just be brutal. In a Western Conference that, you know, I don't know, Bill Reeder, a friend of mine, works for Fox Sports, is their NBA writer. Bill Reeder described to me the Western Conference as the Game of Thrones. Like it's going to be like that show. A lot of very worthy successors to the crown will be slaughtered.
Yeah.
In that conference. It is going to be a brutal contest to come out of the West. And that first round series would be the I'm rooting for it as a fan. Man, that is brutal. I mean, either one of those healthy Oklahoma City and Golden State is a coin flip, and that's 1-8.
Well, I'm kind of rooting for the opposite for a little bit of a different reason. I'm hoping that the Thunder miss the playoffs, actually, because that would be massive amounts of drama in Oklahoma City. I think that would be the perfect excuse for them to finally move on from Scott Brooks, who I don't think is done a great job there with the talent they had. I mean, obviously the injuries this season to both Westbrook and Durant, the midseason trade where they got Reggie Jackson out of there, brought in Deion Waiters. There's been a lot of turmoil this season, so you can't really blame all that on the head coach. But I think if you look at Scott Brooks and his body of work with the Thunder, before this season, you know, Westbrook's explosion, we really saw him struggle to create good offense. And you still see it, man. The sideline out of bound plays in crunch time, they're just not great. And you can do a lot better, I think, in Oklahoma City with that level of talent. So I think if they miss the playoffs, that would be an excuse for them to go in another direction. They would have to do something to beef up the roster before, in advance of Kevin Durant's last season under contract, before he can leave as a free agent. I just think the drama level, it would go to like DEFCON 12 in Oklahoma City if they miss the playoffs this season, and what would have to happen this summer. I think that's more interesting than a first round matchup with Golden State.
I think even if they lose to Golden State, you are spot on. And you can tell that they're desperate in the sense that look at the moves they've made.
Exactly.
Talk about the Reggie Jackson move. And actually, smart moves. I mean, finally getting rid of Kendrick Perkins. The moves they've made to bolster themselves. Enes Kanter was a great pickup. Augustine was a great pickup. I love what they've done. They are clearly in win-now mode. Right now, because they realize exactly what you said. If there's a ring on his finger, it's much harder for Kevin Durant to leave in 2016. And among the things I heard from sources out in New York during All-Star break was Durant is getting a lot of pressure from people in his camp to bolt Oklahoma City for for the Knicks. Like, not Washington, the Knicks. Go to a major market on the East Coast, resurrect that franchise, and you are everything. And that's what there's some pressure from some people in his camp to do. That is very hard to do if you've got a ring on your finger. It's much easier to do if you don't think you can get there.
Well, especially if they're the defending champs. If they win a title next season and then he's a free agent, you don't want to break that up. Then you stay. Maybe you only stay. You know, maybe you start to sign short term deals like what we saw LeBron James do. You know, this offseason to kind of keep your options open and maximize your earnings, because as the salary cap continues to go up, that means the amount of a max contract can go up. So I think there's definitely something to that. And look, you want evidence that playing in Oklahoma City hurts Kevin Durant from a brand standpoint. When's the last time a reigning MVP didn't get voted in as a starter on the All-Star team, regardless of whether or not he was injured?
That's a very good point. And I think, look, if you had that Knicks or frankly Laker fan sure. base behind you, I mean, you could make the argument for either coast. I heard Knicks. But you can make these kind of cases that his marketing brand is better off in some of those markets. I don't completely buy that in the sense that I think social media and a lot of other things change the marketing dynamic in the NBA, and that you can, if you're LeBron James or Kevin Durant level, you can be in a smaller market and completely succeed. The international money and everything else is there, but you got to win. You've got to win. And if he doesn't feel they can win, he'll move on. So they're all in for it. And that was what makes this such an interesting playoffs.
Yeah, and that's exactly why I'm rooting for the Thunder to not make it. Okay, so before we get out of here, let's talk about the San Antonio Spurs. You know, all season long, they're firmly in the playoff positioning. They're in the top eight in the West, but not really wowing anybody, kind of going through ups and downs. Had some guys miss time due to injury, Kawhi Leonard most notably. But now all of a sudden, Spurs look like the Spurs a little bit. Seeing them on national television, beat up on a depleted Bulls team on Sunday. They've won six in a row. Tony Parker looks great. He looks like maybe he's returning to the Tony Parker that we saw, in the finals last season. Are the Spurs back?
Not all the way yet, but you write them off at your own risk is kind of my situation.
Sure.
I Greg Popovich said something really interesting early in the season to a scrum of reporters, not just myself, but I had reported about it. Said, all I can hope for at this age with this team is to take our time, get things right, and come the playoffs, start to get back to the level we were at last year. Because he goes, his thought was, the last three games of the finals last year was as good as this group can play. But if we can get somewhere back to that, near that level, I'll take my chances. Maybe we get beat, but you'd have to be really good to beat us. And I think that's a very valid point, and they're starting to look a little more like that team. And you write them off at your own risk. I don't know that they're advancing, but if they're the 2 seed and they get Memphis, or they're the 7 seed or 6 seed and they get Memphis or whoever in the first round, man, that team is fully capable of rolling and getting all the way to the conference finals or beyond again. If they start to hit that stride, if they're playing like they did last year, they're fully capable.
Yeah, I think anybody but Golden State, I think you give them, you know, more, you know, 50-50 or better chance, right? Memphis, Portland, Houston, the Clippers. I mean, any of those teams, I think, you know, the Spurs are going to be just fine. And you know, some of the detractors of the Spurs are back movement, you know, they point to the schedule, right? So they won 6 straight, but the wins are against Sacramento, against the Suns, again against Sacramento, against the Nuggets, against that banged up Bulls team that was missing 3 of their starters, and then against a Raptors team that has just become a dumpster fire, you know, later in the season. They've fallen off a cliff. So that's their last 6 games.
Good test Thursday night against the Cavs.
Yeah, then that, yeah, exactly. And that's where I was headed. With that being said, we're going to see if they're able to slow down the Cavs, who offensively, you know, are playing as well as anybody in the league. So that'll be interesting. I think the signs of encouragement with San Antonio, though, are you watch their execution. You know, that's what seems to be returning to a high level. And Tony Parker playing, you know, once again at his all-star level is really – and Kawhi Leonard, who's probably maybe, if he didn't miss all that time, defensive player of the year. It's not DeAndre Jordan. We don't have time to get into why. But Kawhi Leonard has been ridiculous defensively. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I don't think the Spurs are quote-unquote back, but they're beating up on the teams that are on the schedule in front of them. And, you know, they're definitely – some signs.
You know, I they are beating the teams they have to beat, and sometimes when you're in a slump, you need some bloops. Batters do this in baseball all the time. I know that baseball is your favorite sport, Brett, but you see this all the time. Guys will be in a hitting slump because it just happens. Then they'll go through this phase where they start drilling the ball. Like they found their groove again, but they're hitting it right at guys.
Yeah.
Then their first couple hits out of the slump are bloop singles, are fluky plays, and then it just starts to steamroll. They've beaten some soft teams, but I think you hit the key. Kawhi Leonard's back. Tony Parker's getting in the lane. If they really start to defend and find their groove, that is a brutal out. They are just a tough team to beat.
Yeah, one thing we know for sure is that the playoffs in the West are just going to be all kinds of awesome.
I'm both looking forward to it as a fan and weeping for people on those teams because, again, very good teams are just going to get slaughtered on the way to the finals.
Exactly. All right, that's going to do it for us, but we've got some bonus audio for you this week. Kurt sat down with Jimmy Butler of the Chicago Bulls, so give it a listen.
We are fortunate to have with us today at the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports, Jimmy Butler of the Chicago Bulls. Jimmy, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
So we got to start here. How's the elbow?
The elbow is great. It is getting better. I'm taking care of my body, so I'll be back in no time.
You know, this is a situation where obviously, you know, you had the kind of freakish elbow injury. Rose is out for a while. Gibson's had the ankle. You guys have kind of been battling injuries all season. In flashes, we've seen this really dangerous Bulls team, but you haven't been healthy and kind of able to sustain it. How do you guys get that right before the playoffs start?
We just got to be healthy. I think injuries happen, but, you know, we just want to get back healthy as soon as possible. But until then, we have good enough guys and a deep enough team to where they can hold the fort down.
Defensively, again, that is the end of the floor that obviously your identity was built on, both you personally and the Bulls. That hasn't been as consistent this year. Is that about the injuries or is that about just not playing the system or what's going on?
I think it's more about us being able to score the ball so well now that we think that we can outscore opponents, which if we want to win a championship like we say we want to, we're going to have to start guarding and stop trying to outscore people and just stop them from scoring as a whole.
Is that something Tom Thibodeau's talked about, or is that something you guys in the locker room are bringing up?
You don't have to talk about it. We know. We're not a team that's normally giving up 100 points, let alone 110. You know, so we know that we have to guard, play better defense. So, you know, Tibbs doesn't have to tell us. We don't have to tell each other because we already know.
Tib takes some heat in some quarters and in some spots on the media still for, you know, all the injuries that the Bulls have and the thoughts that they're running you down and that, you know, in your case, you've been out there so many minutes that you end up injured. How does that play in the locker room?
Tibbs don't have anything to do with it. I think injuries, they just happen. I wasn't, like, overtired whenever I ran into the screen. It's just, I mean, it's basketball. It really does happen. So it has nothing to do with Tibbs. Tibbs is good at what he does, and he's always putting us in a great position to win games. So, I mean, kudos to him. He's a great coach.
Yeah, your injury was a bit fluky. Did you realize how bad it was when it happened?
Not right away because my adrenaline was still going. Basketball was still going on, so I wanted to get back out there and play. But I knew something wasn't right, and I didn't want to risk it to make it worse.
You have partnered with Kellogg's on the Give a Child a Breakfast campaign in Chicago and around. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
You know, the whole campaign, myself and Kellogg, we just want to raise awareness that one in every five kids may go to school hungry in the morning. And to try to change that, we want to provide 1 billion servings of cereals and snacks by the end of 2016 and provide 1 million breakfasts by the end of 2015.
How do you deal with there being so much more demand on your time now outside of just basketball?
Oh, I like it because basketball is only so much for me. When I get to be seen out in public and got my uniform on, that means a lot to me because people get to see me as a person and not as an athlete. So I'll take all the time I can get outside of that uniform.
You get recognized around Chicago a lot now?
I mean, it doesn't help that my hairstyle is one for the ages. So, yeah, I'm recognized a little bit.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Obviously, you've got a lot of questions at both at All-Star Game, and you've gotten this over the course of the season about, you know, being a free agent this summer, you know, restricted free agent and the contract and your talks with the Bulls and all that. Is it hard to put that behind you and kind of ignore that and not think about it and just focus on playing?
Not hard at all. I really do not think about it until you just ask me. Then it popped into my head. But it's gone now. So I try to worry about that when it comes around. There's no telling that I'm going to be playing basketball in 10 minutes. Could get tired of it. I could quit. Who knows? Nobody knows except for myself. And there's no telling that, you know, I'll be playing in a week. So for right now, I just try to focus on what I can, and that's getting back healthy.
Is that one of those situations where you'd rather just let your agent and those people handle it and talk to them when it's time?
Yeah, my agent's really good at stuff like that. So I'm just going to continue to let him talk about my contract situation.
All right, so how many Taylor Swift songs have you listened to today?
Today? Not many. Today was more about the kids for me. So if they wanted to listen to Taylor Swift, I would be more than happy to listen and dance to it with them. But today it was all about getting the kids breakfast.
Yeah. For people that don't know out there, you have a I don't know if I want to go with the word obsession, but you're a big Taylor Swift fan.
Yeah, I like Taylor Swift. I like music as a whole, but I mean, her music's kind of catchy.
What else do you listen to?
I'm sure she'll hear this interview now and be like, what is going on?
Taylor Swift's people seem to hear everything. But, yeah, what else do you listen to? I mean, I know you listen to her. What else do you listen to?
I like country music. You know, I listen to a little hip-hop. But I try to listen to people that I've gained relationships with over the years. So whether it's Ludacris or Lee Bryce or Jason Aldean, whoever it may be, I try to support them just like they support me.
Country. Now, there's not a lot of country music played in NBA locker rooms, would be my experience.
There's some played in ours because of me, and then I get my own playlist and warm up sometimes. My teammates don't like it very much because it's country music, but they get over it.
Yeah, I don't see Derek really listening to a lot of country on the side.
Me either, but you know, I try to throw a little bit in every now and again.